What's the room again?
1240, down at the end.
Ooh, what's that?
Sammy, don't touch that. That's someone's old food.
Here we are. Do you have the key?
You have both of ours.
Oh, right. Not working.
Rub it.
Come on.
Try flipping it over.
Seriously.
Why can't we go inside?
I'm tired.
Give me yours.
You have mine.
All right.
What? Please, if you
Dad,
could just...
Dad, why aren't you opening the door?
Can everyone just shut the...
Don't go there. Go on a real vacation. Go RVing. Learn more at GoRVing.com.
Guys, if you haven't checked up on our social media recently, what have you been doing? I'm at Nick Hardwick, and Jamie is at Jamie.Hardwick. That's J-A-Y-M-E with a period, and then Hardwick, which is not to be confused with the other Jamie Hardwick, who I tagged a little while ago on Instagram, and she notified me that you may want to get this straight, bud. Your wife may be pissed at you. That earned me the Worst Husband of the Week award. Sorry, babe. Anyway, you guys know that Lose Like Alignment is going off. I'm sure you've seen some of the ads circulating. Hundreds of men now are losing staggering amounts of weight on a daily basis. It's been so awesome to see. And of course, I had no idea that life would turn into this for me or for us. I just had to get the information out of my head, share it with others, see if it could help people reclaim their lives. And lo and behold, it has. And I am just really grateful to be a part of this amazing team. And the most fulfilling thing for me and the program is the weekly interactions that we get through the accountability network. So sign up for that. It is awesome to get personal connections and have conversations and get to understand who people are, what their challenges are, and assist on a very personal basis, on a weekly basis. So as this was all going on, we're getting crazy amounts of requests from the ladies wondering if this program's good for them too. And for me, I said, sure, yeah, it is. But really, since the beginning, I've tried to get Jamie to give my plan a try, and she would try it for a day or two and then basically tell me it wasn't for her. And finally, listening to the requests on social media and through email for a female version, and then getting some feedback back from females who were actually in the program and taking that into account, and then asking and not telling Jamie what could make this plan work for her and for other females, she went, took the parts from the men's program that she liked, modified it to accommodate the female body and your guys' individual preferences, and gave it a try. And I tread lightly saying this to her. Thankfully, she's not around right now. But it's been super cool watching her own this program. She has gained control back over the food, has reset her hunger cues, and has lost the weight she's been trying to lose really forever. I know. I don't think she has anything to lose either, but still, she's getting to a place where she feels great about her body, and that is important. In fact, I just get out of the bathroom, and she says, I've lost this weight, but Nick, I've lost an inch off of my waist. She's taken measurements. So we sent the adjustments back to our design team, and voila, the Lose Like a Lady program is born. We would love for you guys to join the team. If you want to know more, all food preferences and eating styles work within the framework we provide in both the men's and the women's program. We do provide body weight only workouts and daily activities known as every hour on the hour exercises, EHO. But guess what? As we tell everyone, the exercise is the least important component of the plan. It's not required to lose weight. If you don't want to exercise, or you've got your own form of exercise that you would rather do, do that. We are never going to discourage that. This program will help you figure out what works best for you. You're going to learn appropriate caloric loads for the day and per meal. You're going to learn how to match your caloric intake with daily activity levels. You're going to break free from the having to eat a meal every 3 hour cycle. It really is an incredibly empowering experience. Also, the program helps build healthy self-care habits that make the program sustainable for life. And it's wonderful when you figure out that the more you take care of yourself, the healthier, the easier it is to make good choices when it comes to food, when it comes to exercise. And the best part about the program that a lot of people find is it's 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off of the plan. That is what we call a diet break. How many programs encourage you to not do the diet? We do that so you're going to build trust with yourself. You're going to take the skills you learned and you're going to put them to test in the real world. The whole process, it's incredibly empowering. When you reclaim your health, you really do reclaim your life. Join our teams. Sign up at hardwick.life. It's like hardwick.com, but hardwick.life. And use the code podcast20 for 20% off the order. And by the way, you can use that code forever on anything site-wide forever. And we want you to know that we're here for you. You can email me directly at nick@nickhardwick.com. I do. I get back to everybody. Try it. Try me. I'll get back to you. Anything you have, show recommendations, any questions, any support, any criticism, we're here for that. Throw everything my way. You need help modifying this program to suit your particular needs? All you got to do is ask. We've helped hundreds of people make this program work in their lives, and you can too. All right, guys, back to the show. Check it out, hardwick.life, podcast 20 for 20% off, and we hope to see you on the network soon. Love you guys. Hey there, guys. Welcome back to the Hardwick Life Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Hardwick. We've got a really awesome guest joining us today, Dr. Tricia Bent-Goodley. She is the full-time team clinician working in the space of mental health for the Baltimore Ravens. So nobody knows this until now. I'm going through a super awesome program through the NFL called the Transition Coaching Program, where we get exposed to all types of incredible thought leaders in an effort to help others NFL members successfully transition out of the sport. So I unexpectedly struggled really hard with my transition after I thought I had it all perfectly lined up, had a job, was going in the right direction, lost all my weight, was getting healthy. Guys, it didn't matter. My identity, my passion, my dream, my purpose, my decision-making paradigm, it was stripped from me. And no matter how hard I tried to not identify as a football player to attain the success that I did, I don't think there was any other way except total buy-in, being fully committed to being a football player. So going through this program, it's had a super powerful effect on me as a man, a husband, a father, and I know it's going to benefit me as a businessman and a friend as well. Hell, it already has. And I hope to help other players navigate through the process so they don't have to suffer as badly. There is going to be some suffering, don't get me wrong. Transitioning in any phase of life for anybody is difficult, and it's going to be difficult for football players too. But Dr. Tricia Bent-Goodley is an experienced, licensed clinical social worker, researcher with over 27 years of expertise in mental health and trauma-informed care, systems engineering, and organizational leadership. Her research, administrative, and clinical career have included a specialized focus on addressing trauma and violence with a focus on community-based interventions, culturally specific care, and working with professional athletes. A primary strength for Dr. Bent-Goodley is that she not only has knowledge of trauma and violence as a researcher, but directly at the grassroots level through a career of developing innovative programs and clinical intervention. Dr. Tricia is a professor emeritus at Howard University and a graduate professor of public health in the Howard University Graduate School, and she currently serves as the team clinician for the Baltimore Ravens. So we get into all types of topics on this one. How has the modern athlete evolved emotionally? How are the teams and coaching staffs evolving? We talk about historical trauma as she takes us inside the Ravens locker room and how their players dealt with and processed the racial unrest and the social justice movements following George Floyd and Breonna Taylor incidents. We talk a lot about parenting with intent to not pass down some of the traumas that we may have experienced as a kid. And I think you guys are going to agree. Dr. Bent-Goodley is a very wise woman with a radiance about her. And even though we're tackling a really tough subject or subjects, she's got the ability to make it a highly enjoyable experience. And I think it's super easy to see how skilled she is at her jobs. And yeah, for a couple of the resources that she does mention in the podcast, for my former players out there, the NFL Lifeline, they're a great resource to get you connected to the people to help you navigate through that transition time, some tough times if you're having them and you already feel like you've transitioned. It doesn't matter. The NFL Lifeline will be your first stop. Hey, we all have tough times, guys. Believe me, I went through it hardcore. Their number is 1-800-506-0078. That's 1-800-506-0078. Or DM me and I can help get you connected to some of the resources. What I'm passionate about, guys, I just I really do want to help. And for non-football folks, Mental Health America can be found at mhanational.org. That's mhanational.org. And National Association of Mental Illness is at nami.org. I hope you guys enjoy.
Good morning.
Dr. Bent Goodley, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
Yes, I am great as well. Thank you. You look wonderful. I love the jacket.
Well, I figured I would try to be as bright as I could possibly be, since I'm talking about a topic that's not as bright as it could possibly be. So,
yeah, I understand.
But I'm sure, you know, it's funny because when I heard you present to the NFL transition coaches, it was, yes, it conjures up some emotions inside of you and it pulls that out. And I didn't even think that I was going to be affected at all. I thought, okay, here we go. Trauma, self-care. I was like, right. And I'm learning to put myself into that space. But as you were going, I was so enraptured, just drawn in. And then the crazy thing is you weren't even asking for us really to share, but in my own head, I was just going through experiences as I was sitting there and kind of reliving some moments that I hadn't thought of in probably 20 to 25 years. And I think you warned us at the beginning of the presentation that there may be times that things come up that you don't even know why it's happening and that's going to be okay. And that certainly did happen to me and it was powerful. And that's, I remember getting off that day off of the call and my wife was out there and I was like, that was amazing. Like that was an amazing, amazing experience. So all about trauma-informed self-care. We're going to get to that. But first, tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell me about, you know, what I would, I guess I'm super interested in is your day job with the Ravens. One of your many day jobs, I guess. You are, you have a very full schedule.
It is a busy schedule, but the Ravens is where I'm at. It is my home. It's where I have my full-time presence. I'm really excited about that. I'm entering my seventh season as a team clinician.
Wow.
And I probably came here through, I would just say it was nothing but God's grace. I actually started working with the rookie program. And, you know, when this opportunity became available, interviewed for it and was really fortunate enough to have folks who have faith in me to be able to do this. So I didn't come in through some traditional way. You know, it was literally just having a real interest in working with young people. I love working with men. And so that made perfect sense for me to be able to be in this space.
A couple things out of there. Why do you like working with men so much?
You know, it's interesting. I think because, you know, I am a sister of three brothers and I spent a ton of time, especially with my brother who's closest in age to me. And I would always be with him and his friends. And so I just kind of became really accustomed to that space and that energy. I have two sons. I've been married for 26 years. So I'm just super comfortable being around men. And so I think that, you know, that and having a love of working with young people, it just makes perfect sense.
All right. So we're going to get to you raising the boys down the line because I'm raising two boys myself and you've got more experience and you've been married longer. And so I've got to ask you, I've got plenty of questions about raising good, strong young men. What do the Ravens look for from you specifically? What's your task? What's your charge?
So every team has a team clinician, which I think is a great thing. And what it is that we do at our respective clubs is we provide mental health care support to players, coaches, and staff. So we're here to provide the person with counseling if that's needed. We can provide referrals if, you know, they need to be referred out to someone. We're here in the event of a crisis. We're able to step in there. And also, you know, if a player has been with us, you know, if they've been with us, we will provide them with getting referrals and getting supports even after they've left and retired and so forth. So we're here really to provide a support, an emotional support. Most clinicians are at their clubs a few hours a week, maybe 8 to 10 hours a week. And then others are there, like me, more than 8 to 10 hours a week and really have a full-time presence. But every club does have a team clinician.
Oh, that is fantastic. Because, and is that new, that it's kind of a mandate coming from the NFL? Because I remember as a player, I stopped playing in 2014 was my last season. And I don't know if it's come about since then. We had a guy that would come on occasion and maybe do like one presentation a year, but it wasn't kind of an in-house person that I could go express my feelings and emotions to, that I could go talk through situations, that perhaps like we could build better relationships as teammates and understand one another more so we could extract more out of one another. Is that a new thing that's coming around in the NFL?
So in 2019, through the collective bargaining agreement, the role of the team clinician was really provided with more depth and definition. So prior to that, different clubs did have a team clinician, just like what you said. You might have a person who would come in and do a presentation and say, hey, I'm here, I'm available. And then that might not, you know, you may not see them after that. Yeah. Or you might have had a scenario where the team clinician may have been there a couple of days a week. And so you weren't quite positive about their role and what they do and all of that. So in 2019, through that CBA agreement, the definition, the shape of what a team clinician is, how often we're in the building, what our role is, all of that was really defined so that you would have more continuity across clubs and more availability. So now it is really different since when you were in the league. And so I think it's a great innovation. It's something really positive that I think players are becoming more and more accustomed to.
Yeah, and I remember running into a coach in 2016 after I had retired, and I was calling Chargers games on the radio broadcast, and I had spoken with a coach, and he said, Nick, this is the first year that I feel like I've ever had to deal with a player's feelings before I deal with the technical side or the tactical side. And he was almost overwhelmed with that. Or is there, do you give help to coaches as well of how do I reach these players better? How do I connect with them? How do I lead them? Because it's a different approach, I think, that's required now.
Yeah, so I think this is where, you know, my experience of having spent, you know, the last 23 years on a college campus. I'm a retired professor now. And
congrats.
Thank you. Cool. And one of the things that I think I learned was, over the years, my approach had to change because my students were changing. Some of the things that at one time they would just kind of go along with, now they were pushing some boundaries, and I had to make some adjustments in terms of how I managed my relationship with them. But also, I needed to make sure that I always saw the strengths and the positives in them. And I think I've transferred that over. So yes, our players are coming in with maybe a different way of expression. They may have different perspectives on the importance of mental health themselves, or they may just communicate a little bit differently. And so I think all of us have to make those shifts. All of us have to, if we're going to work with them, have some flexibility, right? And still see their strengths and their positivity, even if their way of communicating is different than ours. So to that coach, I would say that's a great thing that we're dealing with what the person is saying, where they're at, because that shows up on the field and off the field. So you exactly. are doing a great service when you're able to help a young man be more in touch with what's going on for him.
Yeah. And if you're going to stay relevant, if you're going to continue to connect with that generation and lead and teach them, you have to honor where they're coming from. And it's incredibly important.
Yeah. And to recognize that, you know, I think sometimes we go back to, well, when I was growing up, I didn't do this. You know, right. I didn't ask an authority figure a question about why. I didn't need to know why. I just did it. Well, this generation is different. And we can have ideas about whether we think it's good or not good, but it is different. And I think if we approach it in a positive, we can kind of help one, that young man manage, you know, what it is that they're trying to communicate, help them to kind of see, how do I better communicate it? But we have to be able to receive it, you know, to do any of that. So we can't get to a point of delivering information if the person can't hear us. So this is all about us hearing each other.
And we should be hearing each other more. We should be, yeah, listening to each other more, hearing each other and responding positively. It's just it really is a fascinating topic to me. And I have to imagine this was a very high workload year for you with everything that was going on, the racial unrest, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Black Lives Matter movement, COVID came in, there was a lot of disconnect, and we know how upsetting that has been for so many people in tons of different aspects of it, not just looking at it from one side, but from everybody's perspective. It was a wildly challenging year, and you don't even put yourself in the player's shoes until perhaps after the season, but I got the chance to talk to a couple of the guys. They didn't get to have the fun that we used to have. So all of the work, and yeah, you get to play on Sundays, and yes, you're still making money, but they didn't get the connection. Like my old quarterback, Phillip Rivers, with the Colts this year, his first time on the team, he didn't get to go out to dinner with the offensive linemen for the entire year until after it was over. I couldn't imagine the lack of connection. So how challenging was it? How tough of a year was 2020 in the NFL for these guys?
You know, I have such great admiration and respect for our players and our coaches. I called it a bubble, even though, you know, some people said, well, it wasn't exactly like the bubble the NBA had. Oh, it was a bubble. It was a bubble. Yes. We all knew that we had to follow some pretty strict rules. And you mentioned one of them, which I think was really tough, was being isolated from people, you know, and just not being able, like you said, to go out to dinner or go to someone's house, or just sit, you know, and play Xbox for a little bit at the end of a day, right? Like all of those things just were not permissible. And that was really, really tough. And so, yes, it was a challenging year in being able to really try to provide folks with support, recognizing all of the things that were happening with COVID and the isolation it brought. But also just, you know, people, you know, guys have families, right? So being concerned about their own families and wanting to make sure that, you know, everybody was okay. So it, you know, it took a little bit of doing. But, you know, I tend to look at tough challenges like this as a way of us continuing to grow. So we learned a lot about ourselves last season.
Yes.
There's some things that we know about ourselves, about each other. And I think that folks are going to value being able to sit, you know, at a restaurant together and eat or play Xbox together. You know, next season, I think guys are going to enjoy that experience 10 times more. It'll be much more valuable because they'll remember what it was like to not have it last year. So if there's anything that'll be good, we're going to value each other a little bit different after that.
I hope so. I hope that's the truth, that we don't come out of this and then just all of a sudden forget that 2020 happened. And it's almost as if you want to write things down that you know you miss at this moment or you've missed over the past year. And then when you get to do them, you really are conscious of being grateful for having those experiences, because hopefully we don't have to go through this anytime soon again, but you do just want to be present in the moment that you're there and to think, how good is this that we can finally get to do this again? It's kind of a practice in delayed gratification.
Yeah. And actually, so some of the things that I did, you know, was we would do some visualization exercises, you know, hey, tell me when all the restrictions are lifted and we're back to whatever normal, whatever our new normal is, tell me the first thing you would do. And then we would just walk through that visualization, right? And by the end of it, sometimes people were mad at me because they were like, I felt like I was on that beach, Dr. Trisha. You know, why did you do that to me? It felt so real. but I think, you know, between that and then thinking about, let's list out, like, what are we grateful for? This is something we can still do right now. You know, what are those things that are really valuable to you? What did you learn? If you don't want to put it in a journal, put it in your notes section of your phone to remind yourself, because we do tend to forget. We do tend to forget. And so it's important for us to remember what we missed, so that, you know, I hear people say, well, I miss being able to hug my grandmother. Okay, well, I hope you're really hugging your grandmother more after this.
Yes.
Or move on, you know, from that. And so I think, you know, maybe writing it down and visualizing those things that you love, that you really want to do. But I love having a gratitude journal. I think it's a great thing. And this is a wonderful time to be able to just kind of process that information so you remember moving forward.
Where do you keep your gratitude journal, and when do you do it during your day?
So for me, actually, I love to write. I firmly believe if I don't handwrite it, it just kind of goes away. I do have a planner, and in my planner, I will write down things that I'm grateful for. And then I also have an actual journal. And in that journal, I'll probably detail a little bit more. But sometimes I just need to capture where I'm at in a particular moment, and I may not have my journal with me. So I use both.
It's amazing the power of actually writing it down. I've got notebooks sitting all over my office right now, and it's like, I don't even necessarily go back and look at anything, but it does feel like when you actually write, and not into technology, but when you write, that something gets transcribed into your brain that you don't forget it. It almost cements it in there.
That's exactly right. You know, we are signaling, you know, I always say to guys, when you write something down, you are signaling something to your brain. This is something that you need to remember. It's really different from writing something on your phone or putting something in your notes section. There's something very intimate about sitting and putting your thoughts and writing your thoughts down, right? And then being able to come back to it.
Yeah, I want to go back to something we were talking about earlier, this generation of guys and the coach kind of knocking on him for, because he wasn't willing to adapt yet to having to deal with players' thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And they weren't just machines that he was going to be able to say, hey, you circle, you need to go block that X, right? And that's how a lot of coaches prefer it to be, where they didn't have to do this. But the interesting thing for me is, and we as older generation can knock on the younger guys for being in their feelings all the time. But the funny thing is now, I guess it's a little ironic, right? Is like at 39, 40, 50 years old, whatever it is, we realize that we have things that we need to now go clean up. And maybe if we would have recognized those feelings and emotions and traumas earlier, that maybe we would have been able to do the work and it wouldn't all kind of just catch up to us and hit us in the face at one time and think, I've got some work to do on myself. So maybe they're just well ahead of where we were then.
You know, it's interesting. So I always tend to feel that when we feel something is when we are ready to manage it, right? So if maybe we had tried to address something 10 years ago that we weren't really ready to address, we could do more harm, right? Because we wouldn't have been ready. And so I think that anytime that you are confronted with whatever, if it's a traumatic experience or feelings that overwhelm you, I think that that's the time that you need to deal with it. And don't think to yourself, wow, if I could have just done this. No, you know what? You doing it at this moment right now is when you're supposed to do it. This is when you're meant to do it. Now, here's what I will say. What I love about this generation of young men is I think more and more, they're more willing to talk about what's happening with their mental health, what's happening, how they're feeling emotion, you know, their emotional health. And I think the good thing about that is, one, it signals to other people that you should be doing it too. And I think it signals, especially to other men, that men have feelings. So Nick, this is something very interesting to me. I remember my first couple of years as team clinician, and I, you know, when, you know, folks would just ask me different questions about, you know, how is it working with men, right? And as I would talk with other teen clinicians, I would say, you know, we have to be reminded men have feelings. Why is that important? I think because, you know, society has told us for so long that men provide, they protect, right? They are the anchor of stability. But what they're not are people who have feelings. And so being able to receive men and being able to just start with the point that, you know, as a human being, you've got feelings. And I want to hear all of them. And there's nothing too big, nothing too small, nothing too messy. Let's get it all out there. That's super important because we live in a world that sometimes does not allow men to feel like they can openly express it.
And yeah, that's and football could be just a microcosm of life, right? When we step out in between the white lines, your feelings don't matter. Your emotions, if they're not charged towards winning this football game, you're wrong, right? But then we have to be able to disassociate that performance and that job from the rest of life. And a lot of times I think a lot of us former guys, but I would say to your point, just men in general carry that into the home and carry that into their other relationships with their friends. And we don't ever express ourselves. We put up that barrier because I'm here to work and I can't show weakness and I'm competitive and the alpha male can't not be the alpha male from time to time, right? And how do we, because I argue this too a lot of the times, that the work has to get done, right? Like if you're going to have any modicum of success, the work has to get done regardless of the way that you wake up. If you wake up feeling emotional or you're in your feelings or what, that's fine. Recognize that. But then we also have to disassociate that and go, okay, I still have to move forward with my day and I can't be encumbered by those feelings. How do we balance the two?
So I think the biggest piece that I find is, so I think people feel like when, and I do believe this is true for men especially, right? Because we've not given them as boys the space to express feelings.
Right,
we allow boys to express feelings through anger. And if it's through anything else, we are, you know, grownups, we are uncomfortable with that, right? And so then they learn, just keep it in. Or some guys will learn, well, my anger is what got me here. Well, it's really not your anger that got you there, right? It's your skill, it's your ability, it's all of these, you know, elements of who it is that you are and what you put into your craft. The anger itself, right? That anger didn't get you there. So I think that some guys feel like as they try to unpack that, they're not going to know what to do with it. Like it's going to unravel, those feelings will unravel, they'll be out of control. And then they're like, oh my gosh, what do I do with that? So the thing that I would say is that part of it is helping people learn how to manage it. And managing it means, hey, when I need to get into my workplace and I need to get work done, I need to lean into that and be focused. That doesn't mean those other feelings don't exist. It just means that I'm managing it. I'm going to come back to it and I'm going to wrestle with it. So sometimes I'll say, it's okay for me to take that stuff that you have, that you're working through, that you haven't quite processed yet. I'll hold on to that while you go handle your business. And then when you're done, guess what? It's going to be right here waiting for you because we still need to wrestle with it, right? So I think it's just understanding how we manage it. And that when you're working with a clinician, they will help you to understand how you manage that feeling, those emotions, that intensity that you think will take you over, but it will not.
I love that you say, just leave that with me and you can go about your day and then we'll come back. So you're shelving it for now and then just come back to it. So compartmentalize it, leave it with me. You can trust me and then move along and we'll come back to it later. And I love that.
Yeah, because I think that now this is one of the beauty of my position is that I can say that to someone and then be available to them later in the day, right? That's a little harder for a clinician who's working in the community, but There are still ways in which you go about doing that, right? It's helping people understand how they manage these emotions and these feelings and giving them the tools so that ultimately my goal is that you won't need me for that. Like I always say, you know, one day you'll reach out to me and say, let me tell you what the kids are doing. Let me tell you what hopefully the grandkids are doing. Hopefully we're all old enough for that, right? But the idea is you won't need me because you will have learned how to manage those things, right? And so it's really helping us all kind of get to that place.
Will you put some parameters on trauma for us? Are there differences between you, a clinician, speak about trauma and the way that you hear it used when you're out with general population?
I think people use a lot of mental health language in ways that are not mental health, right? And right, this right. is part of the stigma. So I'll hear people say that was so traumatic. It may not have really been a traumatic event. Or I'll hear people say, oh, that person is acting so bipolar or so schizophrenic. And they really have no clue what that actually is, what any of those diagnoses are. And I think trauma sits under that. So when I think about trauma, I think about four different types of trauma. An acute trauma, which might be a single sort of isolated incident. That could be something where you had a car accident and, you know, it is not something that's recurring, but it is something that has been impactful, right? It's impacted you physically, emotionally, mentally, I would even argue spiritually, right? On some level, your spirit is just feeling unease. There's also chronic trauma. Chronic trauma is more repeated or prolonged trauma. This is the type of trauma where you might see prolonged exposure to family violence or prolonged exposure to community violence. This might be someone who was bullied, you know, bullied on a regular basis. This could be someone dealing with a long-term illness, something like COVID, for example, right. Someone who's homeless. There's also complex trauma. Complex trauma is a little different. This is a person who could be exposed to multiple traumatic events, right? This could be someone who's witnessing domestic violence at home or is experiencing ongoing physical, sexual violence or neglect. So that is a different type of trauma. And then another type of trauma is something we call historical or race-based trauma. And we saw a lot of that sort of begin to unravel with the George Floyd case that happened last year, where you see there's a trauma that's associated with collective and sort of cumulatively based racial incidents and tensions and issues. And so I think that's a different type of trauma that we also see. And here's the thing, people can experience all of these different forms of trauma, right? An athlete who is injured, that can be traumatic. And so while it might not be chronic, it could be acute, right? Where that single incident has been tremendously impactful. Some of our guys have witnessed gun violence, multiple cases of gun violence, or have had significant losses. For me, that might be more chronic or even complex. And so how we treat these things might look a little bit differently. But they're nonetheless all different forms of trauma. So when I hear trauma, that's what I'm thinking about.
How did you address the historical trauma? I'd like to learn more about this. One, because I'm a white male and have no idea what it's like to be a person of color. But two, I'm just interested in the building. How did you handle this?
So I think, you know, one of the things that I will say is that, you know, especially, you know, having the platform of being a professional athlete, you know, of course, you know, you have players who really want to go out and they really want to address all of these different social justice issues or address, you know, the issues that we saw related to what happened with George Floyd as an example, but so many others, right? And I think that's what made that historical trauma so tough. It wasn't just George Floyd. It was countless other persons whose names we don't know that folks have experienced or seen or their own fears, right? Especially as Black men, their own fears or their fears for their children, their fears for their sons, their fears for their daughters, their family members. So part of how we deal with that is really talking that through, like talking through those feelings and those emotions. And I think the other part for me is, you know, my husband says this all the time, that, you know, it's not just about, it's not a race, you know, it really is a marathon. And so part of dealing with what we see in terms of historical trauma is recognizing there's not going to be one thing that we do. It's going to be the collection of things that we do. So it's not just about, you know, what did you do when you heard about what happened to George Floyd? It's about, what are you doing now? You know, how are you living your life? What kinds of ways are you impacting your community that makes sense to you, that feel right to you? So it's how are we making a contribution in a way that makes sense? So we are not reacting, we are responding, right? And so I think the toughest part about historical and racial trauma or any type of trauma, it's just feeling like you have no control. And so part of the conversation is, let's talk about the control we have and think about what will our marathon look like?
No control over perception, and then no control over destiny and outcomes. And is that what you're talking about when you talk about no control?
Yeah, like I think, you know, just like a lot of folks felt like, what can I do? So you had some people and they went to the streets, right? They protested in the street. They, you know, that's where they went. You had other people, they wrote, you know, they were writing op-eds, you know, they were writing things for the paper. Some people did podcasts. Like there's so many different ways that people express themselves. And I think for our guys, you know, even if you're not a professional athlete, right? How do you express that? Well, if you're not a professional athlete, but you're a high school athlete, you have influence in your school. How do you help have conversations around race in your school, right? And not just one time, you know, how are we being responsive and not reactive, right? So I think being able to understand, well, what is my response? Why am I responding this way? Where does it come from? And what is it that I'm trying to do? Like, what impact am I trying to make? Gives you more of a sense of control versus just reacting. Because when we're reacting, we're still not in control. But when we're responding, a response requires some thought, some processing, and you feel like, hey, I'm a little bit more in control of what it is that I'm going to do.
Yes.
So I always call it the pause button. I'm a believer in the pause button. Let's just hit pause and think through what feels right. You know, why do you feel the way you feel? What's going on for you? And processing that so we can be more responsive and not reactive.
I like that pause button. I'm going to have to use that with myself. And I think it's perhaps could be a good tool to use with my boys, because they do react a lot of times with anger and lashing out and yelling at me. And then it wants to pull out this reaction in me, right? Of course, they're confronting me with yelling. And then my natural reaction is to push back against that. And I think just simply saying pause, like they know what pause means. Hey, pause. Stop what you're doing, because, you know, it's like I'm trying to be heard and yelling over the top of them. That doesn't do anything. But I think that pause button could be really effective. I want to get back real quick to just where we were at with the locker room being one of the most interesting places I could imagine to be, and in particular an NFL locker room, because it's mostly black men and white men. And yes, there's some other races in there as well, but it's my experience in a locker room was incredible, right? It was, you're just fighting alongside of your brother. It doesn't matter what race, religion, sexual preference, none of that mattered. And it's such an interesting place to be, because as long as you've got your eyes on that goal in front of us, that we're all trying to win just the one game the next week and stack those wins on top of one another and maybe make a good push in the playoffs. And you've all got that goal. And so for me, when I saw all of the unrest in the country, I'm so confounded, because I'm thinking, like, these people have never spent any time in a locker room. Like you got to get into a locker room and you got to fight with somebody and be on the same team as somebody. And then all of this nonsense goes away because it doesn't matter. As when you're on the same team and you have the same goal, it's the only thing that matters is the goal, and you will do anything for that dude. You'll put your life on the line for that guy. It doesn't matter what any of the beliefs or the color or the none of that matters, or where you come from or your socioeconomic background. It does not matter. As long as you're down for the cause, we're down. And so when I see all this, I'm like, I feel really bad for the people who have never had that experience. And it's so intense and profound that you get that. Like, I got, that's one of the greatest things I got out of that experience, was just the human experience. And yeah, I learned a lot of personal things going through it, and all the struggles and adversities and all those things, and trying to be better every day, right? But then the connection that you get with people from all over the place was just, I mean, it, you can't replace that. And so, like, I live in Indiana, and like, if I get outside of the city and I drive around, like, sometimes I think, well, these people may never get this experience. And so they're going to be living in a vast world of unknown of what is an interaction with a Black person like on a daily basis, that is now my friend and I go out to dinner with, and we have drinks and we share intimate details about a relationship with, and we sleep next to each other in the meeting rooms and on the bus. And it's like, they don't get all that. They don't get that. And it's like, I don't know if they're ever going to understand some of these people that never put themselves in a position to be able to have that kind of cool experience. And I just frankly feel bad for them. Because as a lot of coaches will say, well, you can't teach stupid. You can't teach stupid. Unfortunately.
It's so tough because you are so, so, so right. I don't know of any other space where you have so much diverse thought, right? I mean, yes, Black and white, but, you know, I'm from the West Coast, you're from the East Coast. You know, you're from the Deep South, I'm from the Midwest. Like, I mean, just every point of diversity. And I think it does give you an appreciation that we're all struggling with the same things. We're all trying to get to the same places. You know, we're all, you know, for the most part, decent human beings who are just trying to move through, you know, in this life. And so I think it just gives you a different appreciation and an openness that you don't see in other places. I don't know how we recreate that, but who knows? Maybe if we can use some of our you know, our high school teams, our Pop Warners, you know, our travel teams, all these different teams that we have, you know, maybe if we can begin to explore using those opportunities more, and maybe if more of those parents would come together outside of a game, maybe we might have a shot at getting more folks exposed to it.
I hope so. I'll pray for that. And I do think that sports and competition is kind of the answer there, because that is the one place where you get the real melting pot to happen, and working towards that common goal. I think it's just incredibly powerful. All right. There were several things you mentioned during the presentation with the transition coaches that rang a bell with me, especially as they relate to former players. And this one, especially, because I was sitting there listening to the presentation, it just got like hit in the back of the head with a thought. And I was like, wow, that was really traumatic. And I've never dealt with that. I've never unpacked that. And I won't share it, because it's a lot, but trauma comes back as a reaction and not a memory. That was, and it was just like a visceral thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, where is that all coming from? And then you get the thought and it's like, oh, okay. I've never unpacked that at all. And now I'm 39 years old and I realize there's something there that's perhaps holding me back in a relationship that I would like to have.
Yep. Yeah. And I think, you know, that is the power of trauma. So we had a chance to talk a little bit about the brain and how our brain kind of sits in a space where it can hold that trauma, right? And that's why when we, without going into all of the dynamics of brain behavior, that's why when we are exposed to, or we think about something that we experienced, a traumatic event or traumatic memory, that's why it becomes a reaction and not a memory. because your brain literally goes back to what you felt in that moment. So your brain is not in a place of memory. Your brain is saying, oh my gosh, we're back in this space. What am I going to do, right? And that's why that visceral reaction just kind of swells up, because that's what's happening inside the brain. And so part of what we do, and we talked about this, the beauty of brain science is knowing that there are things that we can do to help our brain to be able to restructure that experience in some ways, right? We can't get rid of it, but we can bring a different meaning, a different thought process to it, so that we have, it creates in us an opportunity where when it comes back up again, because I try not to say to people, oh, you'll deal with it and then it's gone. That's not what healing is. Healing is, you know what, when that thing pops back up, you'll know what to do. You'll understand what it is. You'll be able to say, oh, that's what it is. And then here's what I'm going to do. And so that to me is what really healing looks like. Because when we've experienced certain traumas, they don't just go away. But our goal is to know what to do with it.
It's a tool in the tool belt that when the time comes, you can pull that out. And it's a technique like any other technique that we would learn on the football field. Or in your profession, it's a technique for when this happens, this is the button that we need to hit.
That's exactly right. So if you think about it, what's in your playbook? That's your playbook, right? It is unique to you, because if you understand what the experience is, what's the play, then you'll be able to understand, well, here's what I do in that moment. This is how I can respond. And so I think that's what we all have to have. We all should have some form of a playbook, right? The challenge becomes when we don't know that trauma is still there, or we're trying to ignore that the trauma is still there. Like, we know there's something there, but we're like, I don't have time for that. I don't really want to deal with that. That's way too much. If we do that, one, we don't allow ourselves the opportunity to overcome, which is power in and of itself. But two, it is there. And it's not going anywhere, right? And so it's being able to understand that and think through, well, what's my playbook for healing?
It's beautiful. So my former football players out there listening, you have access to counseling. I think we have access to 8 free sessions, and then insurance will take care of a lot. What about kind of the regular folk that's listening that says, all right, I've got something that I need to deal with that just perhaps came up and I want to get ahead of that. Where do they go?
So what I would say is, first for former players, you can contact the NFL Lifeline. You can contact the PA. So don't hesitate to do that. Right. Yeah.
Or get a hold of me. I'll get a hold of me. I'll put you in touch with the right people.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so you have that resource available to you. For other folks who are looking for that support, I think 2 resources that I like. One is Mental Health America. You can Google Mental Health America. They have a wonderful website. They have a 24/7 number that's available on their site. I think it's a great resource because it also gives you information about some of the different mental and emotional challenges that one might experience. And the other organization is the National Association for Mental Illness. And the acronym is NAMI, NAMI. And what I love about that organization is not only is it there to support the person who might be experiencing trauma or a challenge with their mental health, it's also there for family members. Because one of the things we see, Nick, is that sometimes we may not see what's going on for us, but the people who care about us do. They might notice the changes and shifts in our behavior. They might be the ones to say, you have been really sad for a long time. Or do you think you're depressed? Or you're really worrying a lot more than you used to. Or you know what? Your moods are all over the place. Or you seem really irritable. You know, what's going on? You're so agitated. So anyway, when they see those things, NAMI is a great resource for them too, because it'll help them as family members understand, how do you support someone who's experiencing some of these challenges?
Thank you for that. Those are powerful resources. And I think a lot of the times it's go get the resources. If somebody in your life is, you think, being affected by depression or anxiety or trauma or whatever the case may be, because like you said, like a lot of us would just continue to plow forward and say, it's just life. It's part of the process. Sure, I've been down, but, and you don't know how bad it can get. But when somebody alerts you to the fact that you're different than you were even a month ago, 2 months ago, a year ago, whatever that may be, and then has a little bit, they've armed themselves, I guess, with enough language and enough resources to address it with you to get you to help. I think that's super powerful.
Yeah. And I think recognizing, like, sometimes I think folks struggle with, well, what do I say to that person? You know, yes. What am I saying to this individual? Right. And, you know, sometimes it could just be, you know, you seem to be acting a little different than you are, and validate them. Right. Cause we've used a lot of tough language around mental health. No, you're not crazy. I don't see you as less of a man to get help. Like, there's so much strength that it takes to say to another person, I need help. And so, you know, it's okay for us. And what I always try to say is, this is just a reminder that you're human. That's all it is. It is a reminder that you're human. There's one perfect person that walked the earth. You're not that guy. I'm not that guy. Okay.
Right.
So that means that all of the rest of us are human, and we're going to have stuff. And sometimes we're going to need a little support. It's okay to say, I don't even really know what's wrong. I'm just going to sit here and talk. Let the clinician do the job of figuring it out and putting the pieces of the puzzle together. You don't have to come in with the answer. You can just come in and say, I have no clue, but something ain't right. And I'm trying to get this figured out.
I need help. But it's okay to ask. I remember after I retired, I asked my wife, I went through a really dark period, and I've been super open about it because I think pushing language in that direction is helpful for other men who maybe thought that they were one way, but then all of a sudden they get hit with the reality that, you know, after I retired, I lose my identity, I lose my passion, I lose my purpose, I lose my decision-making corridor. It's like everything was a nice, easy, and not like professional football's easy, but it was easy. Like to wake up in the morning and to get to work and to show up on time. It's like great paycheck, great fun, all the friends, all those, the decisions were super easy. And then you lose that. And then all of a sudden I was just lost in the world. And thankfully I went to my wife and she said, well, we're going to get you help. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to do that and to break down in front of you and to be a mess, like just to be a hot mess and to go, I don't. And I'd said those words, I don't know what's wrong with me. And she said, that's okay. That's okay. We're going to get you the help that you need.
And
see, and that's beautiful to me. That's beautiful. Yeah. And it's so powerful and it's so important, you know, because I hear so often, you know, sometimes men will say, well, I don't even know how my significant other would react to me feeling what I feel. Like, you want me to be vulnerable with my wife or my significant other? Like, you want me to put all of that out there? So what I say to women is, you know, be ready to receive it. And it's a beautiful thing when your partner feels like I can share this with you, right? And we can come up with a way of managing it. Because here's the thing, as women, we're socialized a little bit more with this language.
Yes.
But men are not. They're not socialized with it. So, you know, that man may not know exactly, like he can't put a name to it. He doesn't go, I feel depressed and I'm feeling sad. But you might notice some things in his behavior. We notice with men, for example, who are depressed, they may express it more as agitation. So it may be coming up in a way where the expression just doesn't feel good. And you're like, what is your deal? And so it's understanding that, but we've got to give each other space, right? So being able to support the men in our life, all of us, right? Me included, is being able to say, hey, honey, you know, it seems like you're moving, you're talking, you look a little different. Let's go talk to somebody. Let's figure this thing out. And there's nothing wrong with it. You can still lead and be a wonderful leader in our home. You're still the man, like you're all those things. And the way that you keep getting better is by getting the support, right? Because that's what's going to help you to be more in tune with your purpose.
So I run a weight loss program, and I help a lot of people with that exactly, is when you fail or when you've gotten to this place and you're reaching out and you're trying to find help and they're almost embarrassed by it, right? I need you, you know, and it's men coming to another man and, you know, it's the kind of I need you thing. And I always tell them, what would you say to your friend? You know, what would you say to your friend if he came to you and said, I need some help? You wouldn't be like, what a weenie. You would go, let's get you the help that you need, right? So also be compassionate with yourself. Like give yourself some grace and give yourself some room to struggle and to go through some tough times. So we talked a little bit about it when dealing with traumas. Like we've all been programmed kind of a certain way to react in certain situations. And if we could kind of reprogram the systems, Grandpa raised my dad a certain way. Dad raised me a certain way. And that leads me to be more likely to raise my sons a certain way. And I'm super grateful for the involvement of my dad in my life. I thank him just on my own all the time. And I thank him personally, probably not enough. So thank you, Dad, if you're out there listening, for caring and being invested in me and all that. And it wasn't until I had my own boys that I realized how hard it is to be a parent and also maybe what I put him through. But naturally there's like parenting tactics that I would like to evolve, perhaps not to perpetuate any trauma and have the boys have to get over something before they get to their own successes. Are there ways like in our family, and this is last because I know you got to get going, are there ways that we may be perpetuating traumas within our own families unintentionally, almost generationally?
I mean, absolutely. And there actually is room for generational trauma in those categories that I talked about earlier. So much of the trauma that we experience is coming from, this is what we do. Right? We've always sort of done this, right? Whether it's, this is how we discipline our kids, right? This is what we've done. And then we build all kinds of glamorous stories around it and rework those stories in some ways, right? And so I think part of it is the recognition. So it's saying, I don't want to do it this way, right? Like I value and I treasure and I appreciate what you did for me. And I want to do it a little bit different. So I think one is recognizing I want to change this and then figuring out how to change it. You know, so as a quick example, I know for me, one of the things that I wanted to change was physical discipline, right? Yes. I had to go to my husband and we had a full conversation about this, right? About not wanting to physically discipline our boys. And initially, you know, people were like, they're going to be unruly. They're going to be doing all kinds of stuff. You know, how do you not physically discipline your kids? I mean, they thought it was like they were going to be ruined. And so now, you know, I have one in college and one is a junior in high school. And it took work. I'll be honest. You know, there were days I wanted to go back to the physical discipline. But what I realized was that it was more for me than it was for them. It was me being upset with what they did. And that's where it was coming from. So it was me trying to figure out, how do I do this different? What does it look like? Coming up with some strategies. I went to people, I talked to people, some who were using that same approach, and over time made it work. Was it easy? No, it was hard. And I had to hear other people tell me why they thought what I was doing was wrong, right? So on some level, now I feel like we've had success from that approach. I have no regrets from making that transition. But I think on some level, we got to identify it. And then we've got to actually come up with some strategies and put some things in place so that we are not passing on something else to the kids. You know, I tell my boys, you know, everybody's going to have something. You are not going to leave your childhood and say it was perfect. You got it right. My parents are the best and they did everything they were supposed to do. Come on, man.
That's right.
Not going to happen. But what you will be able to say is I tried my best. I did my hardest. You always have the best I could give you in that moment. And then you will now have some things that you want to do different, you know, with your kids, but hopefully not the same stuff that I came in with, right? Hopefully it's different. Yeah. So I think we just have to be honest about what those things are and talk it through and then be courageous enough to try something different.
Yeah. And that's really what I'm talking about is like the physical discipline, right? So I come from a very corporal punishment background and it worked for me, right? It's like, you know, when you talk to the guys and they say, oh, anger works for me. It's like, okay, to a point, but then at some point now we have to get rid of that. And we have to move past, we have to evolve out of that. And the same thing we were talking about the players, they're different. It's a different generation. They process information differently. The input of the information is completely different. And so a big part of me says, you know, I've heard before, I had a coach say, if you like you, raise your kids to be like you. And then the other part of me says, well, there's parts of me that I like. And then there's parts of me that maybe I don't like so much. And what I'm trying to stop, I'm actually just continuing by showing them that physical contact and aggression is the answer when that's the exact thing that I'm trying to eliminate from, like, the boys get in a fight or something happens. And then here I am spanking one of them. And then all of a sudden I'm like, that, you, in hindsight, you think, well, that made no sense. And I think what you said just rang a bell. It's, is this for me or is this for them? And so, you know, that'll, and I think it requires deep reflection and creativity to work around some of these things. And I think it's probably from a mental gymnastics standpoint, it's probably way more challenging to get the same effect without the means. Yeah.
Yes.
You are so right. Listen, I can't tell you how many times I would literally be sitting, you know, in my room or in the car, because I'd have to hit the pause button. We're going to hit the pause button. Let me get myself together. And I'd be just sitting there like, okay, how are we going to handle this? How is this going to work? And I will tell you now, it's so funny. My boys, one of my sons said to me, he said, Mom, I really wish you had given us spankings. I said, why? And he said, because with a spanking, you get the spanking, it's over, it's done with. He said, and then everybody moves on. But with you, it's like, okay, she's thinking, you know, she's coming up with something and it would be this prolonged thing. And he said, I would just be like, can you please give me a whooping so I could be done? Because once you start thinking, we're in trouble. And so I learned that it actually taught them something. And that's the goal, right? Discipline is to teach you something, not for me to get off me being mad, you know? So right. It did take a lot of thought. It took a lot of creativity. In the moment, Nick, it was hard. At the same time, now I see, you know, I see the benefits of it, right? Where they'll just be like, I laugh because I think my boys swear that wherever they are, if they're doing something, I'm like gonna pop out of a bush or something and be like, I see what you're doing. And it was because of all of that creativity, all of those years. I'm like, there's gotta be some benefit to being a parent. I'll take that.
You were involved. Good for you. That's awesome. That is awesome. Dr. Tricia Bent-Goodley, that was just fantastic. What a great way to spend an hour. I know I took a little bit more of your time than anticipated. I couldn't stop talking to you. I could probably talk to you all day over a cup of coffee. So thank you for that and sharing all that wonderful information.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you for this wonderful work that you're doing. It is so valued, so important. And so I want to thank you for raising this conversation. It's just a wonderful thing. Thank you.
Thank you. And good luck with the Ravens next year. I'll be cheering for you guys.
Thank you for listening to the Believe Network.